Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, October 18th, 2020. We'll begin with the first page, continuing with Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 115. Illinois Impact. 7-day rate holds steady in Champaign County at 0.5%. On rise statewide at 5.2%. 49 new cases emerged from 13,784 new tests Saturday in Champaign County, where the 7-day positivity rate remained 0.5% for the 6th straight day. 9 of the cases were in Rantoul, site of an outbreak at Lincoln's Challenge Academy. Active cases fell by 12 to 352. The 5 zip codes with the most, 61820, Champaign with 91, down 23, 61866, Rantoul, 57, that's an increase of 7, 61821, Champaign, 38, plus 2, 61822, Champaign, 37, plus 3. 61801, Urbana, 35, minus 2. As the U of I campus's 7-day rate held at 0.2% for the 9th straight day, the statewide number was up for the 11th day in a row, from 5.1% to 5.2%. Still, in the Midwest, only Michigan at 4.3% and Ohio at 4.5% are lower. Work on an electronics collection event kept Vermilion County officials from reporting. Continuing on the front page, the article titled, Lordy Lordy, Check Out These 40. Say hello to Central Illinois Business Magazine's 13th 40 Under 40 class, led by Woman of the Year, Giannina Baker, above left, shown in the photograph, the Associate Director of the National Institute for Learning Outcomes Assessment, and Vice President of the Champaign School Board, who helped pass a resolution declaring racism a public health crisis. Man of the Year, Christopher Brooke, below right, shown in the photo, an assistant professor at the University of Illinois who helped expand COVID-19 testing on campus and across the state. The awards recognize young professionals for their achievements, experience, innovation, leadership, and community involvement. The Fantastic 40, full list is on a later page, A5, will be spotlighted in the next issue of CIB. Email Jim Rosso at jrosso@newsgazette.com to subscribe. The next article, titled Champaign-Urbana Public Schools, Districts Taking Different Tax for Second Quarter, by Anthony Zilas. Urbana. The notes she leaves on doors are heartbreaking to Urbana High School social worker Alicia Trezise. Hey, we're really looking for you, the notes read, along with her contact information. I hope you're okay. A small subset of kids Trezise serves simply aren't connecting with remote learning. They're not attending class, and she isn't able to find them to make sure they're getting the social services they need. There is a small section of students, it's not many, but it's not zero, that we're just not hearing from, said Trezise, who is president of the Urbana Teachers Union. It breaks your heart. I'm worried about them. Over the past 2 weeks, District 116 in Urbana and Unit 4 in Champaign have discussed at length how to best serve those marginalized students. And they're approaching the second quarter, which begins next week, in very different ways. Urbana Superintendent Jennifer Ivory Tatum announced that the district would halt plans to move to a hybrid learning schedule for the second quarter and stay remote. The amount of staff available simply wasn't sufficient for a return to in-person school, she said. But for a very small amount of students who are not engaging, the district will provide some sort of in-person support. For around 10% of middle and high school students, buildings will be open. They'll participate in learning labs, which includes tutoring and one-on-one help in person. Elementary students who aren't connecting to remote learning will also be identified building by building, and kindergartners through second graders will come into school for individualized support with an adult. According to new Illinois State Board of Education guidelines, those adults don't necessarily have to be certified teachers. While our original modified plan would have put us in line with the rest of the state, the rest of our county, the rest of the region here in central Illinois, for those that are returning in person, Ivory Tatum said at an October 6th school board meeting, this model will still allow us to serve our most marginalized students in some way. 3 weeks ago, Champaign school board members were resolute in backing Superintendent Susan Zola's plan to allow students to return in person. Zola, who had autonomy to make the decision, moved forward with a plan to allow elementary students whose families wanted them to return in person to do so for 2.5 hours a day. That plan, though, was met with detractors who were worried that it was too much too soon, with not enough support for teachers. The district's teachers union released a letter with a list of conditions for their members' return to school, including assurances about testing, safety, child care, and more. Over the last 2 weeks, Zola and Champaign Federation of Teachers co-vice president Lisa Milkerite met with union stewards at each elementary school to talk about concerns with the plan. Over the ensuing week, the district checked off some of those concerns. Zola met with representatives from Carl Foundation Hospital, who devised a way for school nurses to administer coronavirus tests on-site for symptomatic teachers and students. They also agreed that on Mondays, all students would only meet virtually for 2.5 hours with their full class. Not all of the issues are resolved, and we still have some stuff we need to work out, said Mike Sitch, co-vice president of the teachers union. But the district's been working with us to do that. One issue is limiting the amount of students seen each day by specials teachers who teach classes such as music, art, and physical education, and interacting with multiple classes every day. The district will provide care centers for teachers who have children who are not in school. A prospect at which board member Giannina Baker bristled. That means students who attend school in Urbana but have a parent teaching in Champaign will have a place to go during the day so that teachers don't have to take leaves of absence. I understand the concerns of that for sure, Sitch said. You want to look like you're providing everybody equal and equitable access to the buildings. But some of our teachers were in positions where, if they couldn't find childcare, they really only had the option of taking leave. I think the district knows, and most families want, their teacher. I know for the small percentage of our teachers who are stuck without child care upon returning, it's the make or break situation. As the second quarter approached, both school districts and their boards spoke about the need for equity and the need for the most vulnerable students to receive the in-person help they needed. Unlike its initial plan, devised for fall learning, though, Champaign's new proposal is open to all students. According to a district survey of families, 48.3% of students at Cary Busey Elementary want to return to in-person learning, the highest of any school in the district. While at Stranton Academy of the Arts, only 27.7% want to return. In 2019, 30.9% of Cary Busey students were classified as low income, the lowest in the district. At Stratton, 69% of students met the threshold. Urbana, meanwhile, is only providing in-person services to those who need it most, including students with special needs and others who are disengaged. The district does plan on providing a hybrid option during the third quarter. I'm feeling very positive about the direction we're going and the district's willingness to take a slower approach and try some things before we brought everybody back for hybrid, Trezise said. I know that's not what most districts are doing, but I have a great deal of respect that they're willing to listen and try some things. Continuing on the front page, an opinion by Tom Kasich, titled, It's Go Time for County Clerks. Sure, you're stressed out about this election. You're not alone. A recent Harris poll on behalf of the American Psychological Association found that 68% of adults in the United States say the presidential election is a significant source of stress in their life. That goes for Democrats, 76%, Republicans, 67%, and Independents, 64%. And it's a greater percentage than the 2016 election, when 52% said they were stressed out. But it's not just the voters and candidates who are feeling strained. The people who run the elections at the county level are feeling a bit overwhelmed, too. There's a tremendous amount of work that all comes at once, and it's during a pandemic and during a period of racial and social unrest, said Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons, who has a display on a wall of vulgar and insulting responses his office received from voters who were asked whether they wanted a vote-by-mail ballot and for whom a simple no didn't suffice. Keeping everything new this year, especially with COVID, said McLean County Clerk Kathy Michael. Everything is so different, and I think for the most part, everyone is trying to do the very best they can. We just try to adapt, and we should be able to adapt to about anything. In Vermilion County, Clerk Kathy Jenkins said, presidential elections are always heightened, and we try to anticipate every scenario long before the election comes around. Our saving grace, this too shall pass. There's also a new state election law designed to expand voting by mail because of the COVID-19 outbreak. In Champaign County, more than 27,000 voters requested vote-by-mail ballots. And as of Friday, about 10,000 had already been filled out and returned to the clerk's office. In addition, almost 8,000 people have voted early at the Brookins Center in Urbana. Starting Monday, 11 more early voting sites open in locations around the county, including Champaign, Urbana, Mahomet, St. Joseph, Rantoul, and Tolono. Ammons thinks when all the ballots are counted, including those that are postmarked by November 3rd, but arrive after Election Day, more than 100,000 votes will have been cast. That would beat the old record set in 2016 of 92,842, which surpassed the previous record of 84,804 in 2008. We've got 13,000 people already. That's 13% of what I expect to be the turnout, he said early last week. By Friday, the total was closer to 18,000, and we haven't even opened the other 11 voting places with the extended hours. A surprising bit of information, to me anyway, was that Illinois County clerks and their staffs got no special training this summer from the state in dealing with COVID-19 and the changes in election laws approved by the legislature in May and signed into law by Governor J.B. Pritzker in mid-June. Ammons laughed when I asked about training. To be fair, we've all been dumped into this pandemic and everybody pushing for voting by mail. There's no training, he said. Fortunately, I was looking at some of these ideas going on in other parts of the country, so I wasn't caught by surprise. Other county clerks said they didn't feel they needed more training. In my over a decade here with the ever-changing laws regarding elections, we've never had a training program. We learn as we go along, said Michael in McLean County. I was not bothered, nor did I expect a training session. We must do our homework. Douglas County Clerk Judy Pollock said, I am not sure what the legislators could have done to assist the election officials through this, but I know for sure we have had excellent communication with the State Board of Elections. They have been there every step of the way. We have taken surveys about our needs for personal protective equipment, election judges, etc. They have held many Zoom sessions to answer questions that we may have and assist us with our elections grant spending to make sure we have everything we need. Ammons said he went to Colorado in June and observed how that state's primary election was handled in three separate counties. Boulder, Jefferson, and Denver counties each had 300-plus polling locations until they went to vote by mail, he said. Now 95% of voters in those counties vote by mail. If we have vote centers at some point here where we can have, instead of 95 polling locations, just 25 vote centers and a significant percentage who vote by mail, he said, we can save a lot of cost to the taxpayers and be more efficient. Ammons isn't the first Champaign County clerk to promote voting centers. His predecessor, Gordy Holton, also favored the idea, although the legislature never took up his suggestion. There's going to be some investment needed from Champaign County, Ammons said. We have to invest in this if we want to make voting accessible to everybody. For this election, Ammons' office has been helped by a number of grants, including $15,000 from the United Way of Champaign County and $159,000 from the Chicago-based Center for Tech and Civic Life, which has received $400 million from Priscilla Chan and her husband, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg. The county also has received federal coronavirus relief funds, as well as Help America Vote Act money and some state funding. The money has gone to new equipment to handle the vote-by-mail ballots, the cost of drop boxes to collect those ballots, and postage and staffing costs, including some 500 election judges. Ammons, who has been in office less than 3 years and has only a few holdovers from the experienced staff Halton had, acknowledged the mistakes his office has made, including tabulating primary election votes too early and having the wrong zip code on return envelopes with vote-by-mail ballots. We're human beings. We're going to make some mistakes, he said. Believe me, nobody is kicking me in the butt more than me when we make simple mistakes that are avoidable and affect voters. But we're learning this thing. Tom Kasich's column appears Sundays in the News Gazette, and he can be reached at Kasich@newsgazette.com. Continuing on the next page from Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. As much fun as Bob and Mike Plucky had in winning the inaugural Con Cup, they'll get a bigger kick out of cashing in what ranks as the coolest first place prize in area golf tournament history, an all-expenses-paid trip to an NFL game. Team Plucky won the year-long golf competition at Shahid Khan's Urbana Country Club, beating out 31 other duos in a bracketed format that wrapped up October 1. They celebrated with a burger and beer before studying the schedule of the Jacksonville Jaguars, owned by Khan since 2011. Unless things change, Bob and Mike will be wined and dined before, during, and after the Jaguars' home game against the Bears on December 27th. Bob is vice president at Busey Bank, and Mike, a multi-sport all-area performer at St. Thomas More, who played college baseball at Illinois Wesleyan, class of 18, is an accountant with Martin Hood. The best part of the tournament was definitely playing with Mike, Dad said. Watching him compete in a new sport and watching him play through the highs and lows of golf. A competitive type like his dad, Mike, 25, enjoyed the high stakes and is looking forward to attending his first NFL game since the Bears played in Champaign in 2002. The prize was incredible, and just getting out and competing again for something was fun, Mike said. There definitely was pressure, and I had a pretty good partner. Continuing with this day in history, area history in 1920, several hundred men and women gathered at Westside Park in Champaign to greet the Republican candidates who arrived on an Illinois Central special train. Among the candidates were William B. McKinley, candidate for U.S. Senate, Len Small, candidate for governor, and Lois Emerson, candidate for Secretary of State. In 1970, Illinois lost its fifth straight homecoming game before a crowd of 42,708. The final score was Indiana 30, Illinois 24. The Hoosiers had entered the game winless that season. And in 2005, U.S. District Judge Michael McCuskey was appointed to the Board of Trustees of Illinois State University. Governor Ron Blagojevich made the appointment September 29th. McCuskey, a federal judge who presided in Urbana, was to serve on the seven-member board until January 2011. International history today's highlight, on October 18th, 1944, Soviet troops invaded Czechoslovakia during World War II. On this date, in 1867, the United States took formal possession of Alaska from Russia. And in 1892, the first long-distance telephone line between New York and Chicago was officially opened. It could only handle one call at a time. Continuing with an article on the coronavirus response titled, Rural Midwestern Hospitals Struggle to Handle Surge. This is out of Westington Springs, South Dakota. Rural Gerald County in South Dakota didn't see a single case of the coronavirus for more than 2 months, stretching from June to August. But over the last 2 weeks, its rate of new cases per person soared to one of the highest in the nation. All of a sudden, it hit. As it does, it just exploded, said Dr. Tom Dean, one of just three doctors who work in the county. As the brunt of the virus has blown into the upper Midwest and northern plains, the severity of outbreaks in rural communities has come into focus. Doctors and health officials in small towns worry that infections may overwhelm communities with limited medical resources. And many say they are still running up against attitudes on wearing masks that have hardened along political lines, and a false notion that rural areas are immune to widespread infections. Dean took to writing a column in the local weekly newspaper, the True Dakotan, to offer his guidance. In recent weeks, he's watched as one in roughly every 37 people in his county has tested positive for the virus. It ripped through the nursing home in Wessington Springs, where both his parents lived, killing his father. The community's six deaths may appear minimal compared with thousands who have died in cities, but they have propelled the county of about 2,000 people to a death rate roughly four times higher than the nationwide rate. Rural counties across Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana sit among the top in the nation for new cases per capita over the last 2 weeks, according to Johns Hopkins University researchers. Overall, the nation topped 8 million confirmed coronavirus cases in the university's count on Friday. The true number of infections is believed to be much higher because many people have not been tested. In counties with just a few thousand people, the number of cases per capita can soar with even a small outbreak, and the toll hits close to home. One or two people with infections can really cause a large impact. When you have one grocery store or gas station, said Misty Rudebush, the medical director at a network of rural health clinics in South Dakota called Horizon Health Care, there is such a ripple effect. Wessington Springs is a hub for the generations of farmers and ranchers that work the surrounding land. Residents send their children to the same schoolhouse they attended and have preserved cultural offerings like a Shakespearean garden and opera house. They trust Dean, who for 42 years has tended to everything from broken bones to high blood pressure. When a patient needs a higher level of care, the family physician usually depends on a transfer to a hospital 130 miles away. As cases surge, rural hospitals are having trouble finding beds. A recent request to transfer a not desperately ill but pretty sick COVID-19 patient was denied for several days until the patient's condition worsened, Dean said. We're proud of what we got, but it's been a struggle, he said of the 16-bed hospital. The outbreak that killed Dean's dad forced Wessington Springs' only nursing home to put out a request for nurses. Thin resources and high death rates have plagued other small communities. Blair Tomshek, interim director of the health department in Toole County, Montana, worried that the region's small hospitals would need to start caring for serious COVID-19 patients after cases spiked to the nation's highest per capita. One out of every 28 people in the county has tested positive in the last 2 weeks, according to Johns Hopkins researchers. It's very, very challenging when your resources are poor, living in a small rural county, she said. And that's going to wrap it up for this section. We'll take a short break, and please come back, and I'll return with the second half of the News Gazette for Sunday, October 18th. Thank you.